Well, Mike, we have regularly reported on cases around the world, including dozens of jurisdictions in the US that take big oil to court over its big role in the climate crisis. Before turning to updates on cases today on the Left and the Law, let's talk about Trump and his own big oil campaign. Trump invited more than 20 oil and gas company executives to his club last week, asking them for $1 billion presidential campaign contributions and offering in exchange the promise to undo Joe Biden's restrictions on natural gas export permits, oil drilling, and car pollution. So Trump has cut out the middlemen, the lobbyists in this deal. So, Mike, is this just an example of Trump making corruption more blatant than the lobbying system of corruption that has been in place for so long?
I think so. I mean, we have a formal way of bribing people, which we call lobbying. And there are ways by which oil companies have shaped policy in this country for decades. And Trump is doing that thing he does that is so refreshing, which is bring all of the kind of slick, oily, textured forms with which corruption takes in the United States and putting it all right out on the table.
Yeah, but
Give me
I
a
think
billion
we'd
and I'll give
immediately.
you billions back.
Yeah, right. It's like a TV ad. Cut out the middleman. Save today. But is there a risk of being too cavalier in this as well? Because even though the system is slick and oily, as you say, morally, politically, it's also, there's a risk in Trump's current campaign in his audacious statements around being the dictator just shortly after he's elected, all of his promises around sweeping immigrants out of the country that they're not taken seriously. And it's not a simple issue translating dog whistles or more traditional forms of corruption into this blatant kind.
Well, that's true. And Trump is kind of clownish himself, but he has behind him a host of very effective administrative conservatives who, for example, the way they organize the appointment of judges in federal courts all over the country has been extremely effective. So his defiance, his temperament, which is always a very attractive feature in anybody, more so than their policies, is one thing, but he's quite capable of allowing to flourish just beneath him a whole host of administrative changes that would make everything worse in this country.
Apparently, Wall Street executives are warming to Trump on some of these very grounds, although they wouldn't state it so crudely. But apparently, he's doing better with Wall Street executives for many of the same reasons that see Trump as more friendly to big business.
Well, and that's why litigation can become important. It will become very important if Trump wins again. There'll be nowhere else to hide. And there are a lot of cases moving in important directions.
Yeah, and Stateline magazine reported last month that after a long slog, as they put it, climate change lawsuits will finally put big oil on trial. 32 lawsuits now target fossil fuel companies over climate change. Is it the number of cases, Mike, or is it the type of arguments and evidence that makes this significant?
Well, there are at least two types of litigation. One type is embodied by the Juliana case, which was an effort by a nonprofit organization, Children's Trust here in Oregon, to stop climate change. It got a really good order from Judge Ann Aiken, and they were ready to proceed to trial. The defendants were various companies like Exxon, who have been polluting and who knew for decades that their products would indeed pollute to an extraordinary extent, but while at the same time saying it was all very uncertain as to whether such things would happen. But Juliana got shot down in 2020
I
by
should also say it's popularly known as Youth versus Gov, but
a
Juliana is the lead plaintiff.
Yes. The case lost in the Ninth Circuit 4 years ago, in a decision that was really, it was a very close case. And everybody conceded that we were hell-bound train, you know, riding toward disaster. And the only issue was whether or not the courts had any role to play. And there was a really vigorous dissent by Judge Josephine Staten saying, yes, indeed, the Constitution does not require us to put our fingers in our ears and let the train hit us without making any effort to fight back.
And where was that judge ruling from?
That was the Ninth Circuit, but it allowed the plaintiffs to amend their case. So they did, and Judge Aiken made a really good and lengthy opinion, essentially saying, let's go to trial. If you can prove what you say, we do indeed have remedies. The government once again appealed, and the Biden administration intervened, and on May 1st of this year, the case was thrown out by the Ninth Circuit, and plaintiffs were not given any chance to amend. So that case is over.
Now, can you explain the writ of mandamus that was central to the ruling? Just briefly.
No, you don't want to know. Writs of mandamus, or you want to mandate somebody to do something because they've have some sort of ministerial duty where they've just got to do it and they haven't done it. The important thing is that that case is over, but it's like a really valiant soldier in a war. All these cases have different qualities and features. And although it's dead, it has paved the way for many other lawsuits just like it and for other kinds of lawsuits. You know, a very different kind of lawsuit, but even more effective kind of lawsuit generally, are lawsuits brought not by nonprofit corporations with idealistic motives, but by people who want to get rich. And that's basically at the heart of a lawsuit brought here in Multnomah County, Oregon, which experienced, as you may vividly recall, the most extreme heat event in Oregon's history 3 years ago, when we had a heat sink 3 or 4 days with highs of 112 and even 116 degrees Fahrenheit. Here in Portland, there were serious consequences. You know, 40% of Multnomah County does not have any cooling, and people just suffered extremely. 69 people died of heat stroke.
And all the inequities that run through the system and access to services, including air conditioning and tree-lined streets that provide some cooling. I mean, all of those inequities are amplified.
They are indeed. Now, this was not a natural weather event. In the aftermath of this catastrophe, many scientific studies were conducted, all of which reached the same conclusion, that the heat dome was caused by fossil fuel pollution that superheated our planet's surface. It dried out the soil around us, intensified a high-pressure system. It turned Multnomah County into a convection oven. It was a horrible thing that killed trees and people and was not a, quote, natural event. And now there's a lawsuit, a really well-crafted lawsuit brought by a downtown law firm.
That Multnomah County, just to clarify, has enlisted this firm.
Yeah, Multnomah County is the plaintiff. Mm-hmm. And they've got filed a lawsuit against several leading fossil fuel producers, sellers, industry insiders. They basically allege that the catastrophe was not at all caused by an act of God, but rather by the world's largest energy companies playing God with the lives of innocent people by selling as much oil, gas, and coal as they possibly could, at the same time lying about and concealing how much harm pollution from those products would likely happen, in facts that they've known for many decades. And that frame of mind, that ability to prove a fact that you acted in a harmful way, knowing as you did it that it was harmful, is the strength of this lawsuit and the other litigation that's pending now.
So, Mike, I wanted to have you say more about your point earlier that law firms that are in the business of making money and calculating cases they take on that basis, in some ways, are better positioned to go after these big companies, even though we've also talked about this is a long game and that the fossil fuel companies have, as you've said, more money and more power than God. And they can usually outlast their opponent. So, what are the dividends in this high-risk situation for companies that expect that they can make money going after these big oil companies over time?
Well, I think all these different forms of lawsuits are necessary, as well, of course, as all the forms of political pressure outside the courtroom that create the ambiance in which court decisions are reached. That has to happen as well. But like the tobacco companies are a good precedent in that for years they successfully evaded and avoided all efforts to litigate. Then there was discovery made that they themselves knew that their products would cause cancer, and they had suppressed that information. That made lawsuits more valid. There were public interest law firms against them, but there were also bets made by states and by local municipalities and by big law firms that investments might pay off. And eventually,
Investments in these lawsuits.
investments in the lawsuits, it's
So
too
that
bad.
itself is kind of an indicator of something.
It is. It's an indicator of possibility. People are willing to take a chance and to invest in something they might lose. They're willing to risk, but there has to be a huge payoff within sight, a credible path toward making billions of dollars. And that's what I think people see now. There is a way, for example, in Multnomah County, the heat sink was a distinct event. It had tangible, measurable outcomes. There's lots of science showing that it was not a natural event. That's supported by the fact that there's never been anything like it before. So how natural can it be? The lawsuit has every chance of, it doesn't have every chance, not a guaranteed success, but the possibility means that there will be significant investments made in discovery. It costs money to depose people. It costs money to review 40,000 pages of documents and extract information. People are willing to make those kind of investments now, not only for the reasons of doing good and saving the planet, but also of getting rich.
So law firms also get rich through various settlements. And, the whole legal system in this country is, we were talking about legalized bribery and corruption earlier, but there is a lot of that in civil lawsuits where, as well as criminal lawsuits, but we're talking about civil lawsuits where powerful companies pay out. Big pharma's settled many cases by paying pretty large sums to plaintiffs to settle cases. I mean, could this end up being just another way of a cost of doing business? You periodically pay a billion here, a billion there.
Of course, and they have 2022 was the best year in history for oil companies. They're making billions of dollars every week, so they've got vast funds. But
They've done okay under the Biden administration, we should note.
they've done just fine. But like the tobacco companies ended up signing a settlement for over $200 billion, and that was a few years back. So they could be. These, a billion here and a billion there. And after a while, you do start talking about important money. And when you get into individuals, that's when you can start making things sting. They're going to be deposing individual executives who made certain decisions. The more discovery they get, the more results they get that are favorable, the more opportunities to go after separate people, which will definitely get their attention, the more possibilities will open up for injunctive relief and other sorts of relief that would target their actual behavior and place limits on them. So all of these things are going to require an attention span at least as long as that of the oil companies, and that attention span is endless.
So a key of these cases, just to clarify the point you were making earlier, is that that the knowledge of the effects of their products that were hidden, it's not the effects themselves, it's the knowledge for a sustained period of time and an intentional campaign to conceal, distort, or deny that knowledge. That's what the cases hinge on. Is that correct?
That's a critical element. You've got to prove intent, and they now have that critical element. Their the delay, in some ways, has worked against the oil companies because what surfaced just not long ago is that Exxon had predictive models of exactly what happened, in effect, in the 1970s and 80s.
Around global warming.
Yes, and the fact that by 2030 it would be catastrophic. It followed with eerie accuracy. I mean, I haven't seen any predictions from anyone else, including universities and institutions of any type, that are as spot on as the predictions made by Exxon in 1983 of the effects of global warming in 2020.
Is their general defense strategy in these cases, which I assume differs in jurisdictions, but is it that they didn't know, they didn't get the memo that day, or is it that, well, they were in a bind because they're still producing a product people need and they're doing their best to ameliorate these effects? What's their best defense strategy?
Delay. The first move made in the Multnomah County case, as with every other case around the country, is an effort to move it from state court to federal court. And in federal court, they have an easier task, the oil companies do, because they can challenge standing. They have all sorts of other ways of impeding progress on the suit. So they don't ever want to get to the merits of the issue. Good God, you're talking about what they knew and when they knew it. They want to mess around with jurisdictional struggles and standing issues for a long, long time.
Every night, as far back as I can remember, we hear CNN commentators explain that Trump's strategy is to delay, delay, delay. It's not only Trump's strategy. It'd be nice if they also talked about other cases other than Trump, but it's a familiar playbook.
Yes.
A lot of people in power.
Well, last year was a very important year for this kind of litigation, because that's when the U.S. Supreme Court essentially turned back or did not act in the oil companies' interest by allowing them to remove cases from state to federal court. They refused to allow a case that we talked about when we first started talking about these cases, the one brought by Keith Ellison in Minnesota. The first strategy there was to remove it to federal court, and federal court, the circuit court there, said, this is not our case. And the oil companies appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court did nothing. So now that one is back in state court, and it can go ahead. And the whole effort to stall by moving cases from state to federal court is taking a severe hit from them refusing in two other cases to grant certiorari and take this up as if it were a seriously important issue, the right of the oil companies to remove from state to federal court.
Okay, so, and closing today, Mike, our regular report on bringing big oil to court, I want to remind listeners that on KBOO, including the Old Mole Variety Hour, it's one of the few places where you do hear these regular updates on taking the fossil fuel industry to court, because the mainstream press rarely, if ever, mentions these cases and they're important. So we'll return to these cases with updates regularly.
Good. Let's do that.
Thanks, Mike.
Fire, only